when Arion turned around, leaning her back against the sun-warm wall of the barn, Tess took her hand. Her fingers were long and pale and slender. Arion's were tiny, the nails chewed to the quick. Arion drew Tess through the open, rusty-hinged door inside the barn, where they would be safe from the eyes of the other milkmaids, who would be gathering for supper soon. They stood among hay and horses, a few cows lying curled together in a corner. The scents of the animals were everywhere, the horse's musk, the chicken's downy sweetness, the dried sweat of the cow's hides.
"There is a way for us to be together," Tess said to Arion in a low voice.
"How? You would defy him?"
"No, Arion," the demon shook her head. "I took my oath. I am bound to Lucifer."
When Tess turned her head to gaze out the barn's door and across the endless meadow, Arion glimpsed the dark, starburst tattoo that marred her lovely skin. It was the sole blemish that could adhere to angels' bodies. Except for their wing scars, every other ink mark or wound or scar in time would fade away. Lucifer's mark was the only part of Tess that Arion could say she did not love. She reached up to touch her own neck, pale and unblemished, pure.
"There is another way," Tess said,
pressing close to Arion so that their feet overlapped. Tess's love smelled like jasmine, and she often said that Arion smelled of sweet cream.
"A way to stop living like this, with everything between us always a secret."
Tess extended her arms toward Arion and reached around her shoulders. Arion thought for a moment that they were going to embrace again. She felt her body drawing in, needing to be held. Instead, cold fingers crawled up the back of her neck.
"You could join me."
Arion lurched away. Her skin crawled.
"Join me as my soulmate, Arion. Join me and take your place among the ranks of hell."
2. Infernal Desires. Arion recoiled.
"No," she whispered, certain of its impossibility. "I could never."
Tess's blue eyes pleaded with a fierce intensity.
"We can end our secret affair and proclaim it to the universe."
The way her voice boomed, echoing off the rafters in the barn, made Arion nervous.
"Don't you want that?" Tess cried. "Don't you want to be together, to snap the arbitrary shackles that prevent us from being our true selves?"
Arion shook her head. This was unfair. Tess was out of her mind. She had the most sublimely beautiful soul Arion had ever seen, but this time she had gone too far. If she cared for Arion at all, Tess would already know what her lover's answer would be. But then... Arion wavered, allowing herself for a moment to see the situation from Tess's point of view. Of course Arion wanted to love Tess openly. She always would. What else did she have to do to prove it?
No.
How could Tess ask this of her? To side with hell over heaven? That wasn't love. That was insanity. "Maybe the rules are right," Arion said tentatively. "Maybe angels and demons shouldn't..."
"What?"
Tess cut her off.
"Say it."
"Lucifer would never allow it," Arion finally said evasively, turning away from Tess to pace the barn. She passed the horses in their stables, the cows in their pen. Everything had its place. She looked across the barn at Tess, and had never felt further away from the soul she loved the most.
"Lucifer might allow it," Tess started to say.
"You know how he feels about love," Arion snapped.
"Ever since..."
But she trailed off. That old story didn't matter. Not right now.
"You don't understand."
Tess laughed a false laugh, a as if Arian were failing to understand something as simple as an arithmetic problem.
He said that if I brought you with me...
Who said?
Arian's head snapped up.
Lucifer?
Tess stepped away, as if afraid, and for a moment, Arian thought she saw something in the rafters of the barn. A stone statue. A gargoyle. He seemed to be watching them. But when she blinked, he was gone. She found Tess's wild eyes again, and she felt betrayed.
You told him?
Now Arian marched toward Tess, stopping just short of her lover's breast. It heaved with surprise at being confronted, but Tess did not back away.
How dare you?
Arian spat, spinning on her heel. Before Arian could run out of the barn, Tess grabbed hold of her wrists. Arian wrenched away, feeling Tess's fingers drag against her skin.
Leave me be!
Arian shouted, not meaning it, but Tess wasn't listening anyway. She came at Arian again, yanking on the sleeve of her gown so hard the fabric ripped.
Yes, I told him,
Tess bellowed, shouting right into Arian's face.
Unlike you, I don't care who knows.
Arian pushed her. She pushed her so hard, Tess fell backward into a tower of stacked milk pails. They toppled over, falling on her with a clatter, splattering her pale skin with a few white drops. Tess kicked the pails away and rocketed to her feet. And then, Arian had not been expecting this, her wings bloomed out behind her shoulders. They never exposed their wings to each other. It was something they'd agreed on ages ago. It was too plain a reminder that their love was not meant to be. Now Tess's broad demon wings filled the barn with shimmery light. They were the gold of the last moment of a sunset, tall slopes that rose high behind her shoulders like twin mountain peaks. They beat lightly at her sides, fully extended, rigid, with the tips curled slightly outward in Arian's direction. The ritual fighting stance. The horses whinnied, and the cows began to bleat, as if they could sense the tension, the brink of something bad. What happened next, Arian did not intend, but she also could not help it. Her wings responded to the call. They bloomed out from her shoulders in a rush that felt so innately good she let out a heedless cry of joy. But in the next moment, she choked with regret to see them billowing out at her sides. Tess beat her great golden wings, and her body rose. She hovered in the air for a fraction of a second before she lunged down, tackling Arian. The two of them rolled to the floor of the barn.
"Why are you doing this?"
Arian cried, gripping Tess's shoulders, straining to hold her back as they wrestled. Tess had a fistful of Arian's long hair. She jerked it backward to look Arian in the eye.
"To show you I would fight for you. I would do anything for you. Let me go!"
Arian did not want to fight her love, but her wings felt the old magnetic pull toward the eternal foe. Arian screamed out in pain and slapped the face she'd only ever wanted to dote on.
"Once you join me," Tess fumed, pinning Arian's hands to the ground. "He will accept you. He will accept our love."
Arian shook her head, cowering beneath her lover. She was afraid of what Tess would do next, but she had to tell the truth.
"It's a trick."
"Shut up."
"A trick to get me down there. One more soul is all he wants."
Arian strained against her lover's grasp, against her own leaden wings, which cast sparks each time they brushed against Tess's.
"Lucifer is a merchant,"
she shouted over the din of their brawl.
"Staying in the market after sundown just to make one last sale. As soon as I joined you."
Tess froze, her flushed face an inch above Arian's. She let go of Arian's hair, unleashed her from where she was pinned to the ground. She cupped a hand to Arian's cheek.
So you'll consider it?
There was so much heat in Tess's blue gaze that Arian's heart melted.
I can remember the first time I said goodbye to you, Tess whispered. I was so afraid I'd never see you again.
Arian shivered.
Oh, Tessriel.
How could she resist one final kiss? The fight dissolved as her head lifted toward Tess, whose whole face changed. Love flooded back in, filling the space between their bodies until there was no space between them. They threaded their fingers through each other's hair, limbs entwined, and held each other close. When their lips met, Arian's whole body ignited with frustrated passion. She drank her love in, never wanting to break from this embrace, knowing that when it was over, they would be over. Her eyes drifted open, and she gazed upon her true love's peaceful face. Arian could never really think of Tess as a demon. Never. She would remember her like this. Without her realizing it, her lips had pulled away from Tess's. Her heart was heavy, cumbersome, and sad. She sat up slowly, then rose to her feet.
I cannot join you.
Tess's eyes narrowed, and her voice grew shockingly cold, the way it did when her pride was wounded. She didn't get up from the ground.
You're a fallen angel, Arian. It is time you realize it and come down from your altar.
I am not that kind of fallen angel.
I am not like you.
I fell because I believe in love.
That's a lie. You fell because Daniel dragged you and me and everyone else down with him.
Arian flinched.
At least Daniel's brand of love doesn't require that one person betray her nature.
Are you so sure of that?
The question hung in the air. Arian walked to the trough against the far wall and added feed and a bucket of well water to the horse's bins. She heard Tess sigh.
I believe in Daniel's cause, Arian said. I believe in Lucinda.
Wrong again. You were assigned to them. You have to look after them, or those idiots from the scale will come for you.
It doesn't mean I don't believe. I won't give up on Lucinda and Daniel.
Instead, you would give up on us?
Tess was crying now. She sat in the center of the barn and wiped her tears on her muddy handkerchief.
Tomorrow is Valentine's Day, Arian.
I know. We agreed to fly to St. Valentine's Fair, where Lucinda and Daniel and all the others will be.
Arian's voice wobbled.
We were going to be merry.
Merry? Pretending I am not your love and you are not mine? Pretending to search for what we already share?
Tess scowled. Arian didn't answer. Tess was right. Their predicament was excruciating. Tess stood at last and drew close to Arian. She took the pail from her hands and set it on the ground. She cupped a hand to Arian's cheek.
Let Luce and Daniel have their Valentine's Day. Let us have ours. Celebrate true love by making a covenant with me. Join me, Arian. We could be so happy together if we were truly together.
Arian swallowed the fear rising in her throat.
I love you, but I can't turn my back on my promises.
She moved from Tess's grip. Arian's eyes raced to capture every detail about Tess, the slow sway of her red hair in the breeze, her pale bare feet in the rough straw, her hand making the shape of Arian's hand's absence, tears rising in her bright blue eyes. Even the spectacular golden gleam of her wings. This would be the last time they would see each other. This would be their last goodbye. 3. The first cut is the deepest.
Never,
Never. Never. Arion's soul was heavy as she flew. She should have known this was coming. She had known. Something in her soul had long felt that a day like this approached, when Lucifer would call Tessriel back. But she had never expected Tess to ask her to give up her place in heaven, to trade it for the fires of hell. Her temper flared now, and her wings flexed and strained in response. Sometimes, when Arion stayed too long in mortal guise, she forgot how vast her wings were, how strong, how deep the pleasure of letting them out from her shoulders, the winged energy of delight. She should have been feeling the exultation she always felt when soaring through the sky, but now her silver wings were just sad reminders of what she was and of what her love was and of how she and Tess could never be together. Never. "I can remember the first time I said goodbye to you," Tess had told her in the barn. "I was so afraid I'd never see you again." Arion remembered it too, thousands of years ago. She and Annabelle and Gabby had been hovering in a dark rain cloud on the outskirts of a place called Canaan, watching a mortal celebration led by a man named Abraham, when the angel appeared out of nowhere and hovered before them in the sky.
"Who are you?"
Gabby was hostile, addressing the angel with a bright red hair and crystal blue eyes. To Arion, the unknown angel's wings were lovely, and her body looked as soft as a cumulus cloud. Lightning flashed across her radiant white skin. Arion remembered wanting to reach out and touch her, as if to make certain the angel was real.
"I am Tessriel, your former sister in heaven."
The unfamiliar angel had bowed her head in deference.
"Angel of the thunder that rolls across Eurasia."
Tessriel was looking at Arion, and something in a distant meadow of Arion's soul recalled this angel. Her sister. Yes. They hadn't known each other well in heaven. There had been a league of other angels between them, but there had always been a connection. That inexplicable mystery called attraction.
"I bring news of your brother, Roland," Tessriel said to Arion, who had gasped at the sound of his name.
"Roland resides in Lucifer's domain," Gabby said sharply. "You bring us news from hell?"
"I bring you news."
Tessriel's voice wavered, and Arion's heart went out to her. She hadn't seen Roland since the fall, and she missed him desperately. This angel had come with a message. Arion scrambled forward, pressing up against Gabby, who held her back with the white edge of her wing.
"Go now, leave us be," Gabby commanded.
It was final. Tessriel shook her head sadly as she turned to go. She looked back once at Arion, briefly and with great sorrow.
"Goodbye."
"Goodbye."
But it wasn't goodbye. Years later, on her own, walking the shoals of a mortal river, she came upon the red-haired angel again.
"Tessriel?"
Tessriel looked up from the river where she was bathing. She was naked, her pure white wings skimming the surface of the water, and her long red hair trailing slickly down her back.
"Is it you?" Tessriel whispered. "I thought I'd never see you again."
When the angel rose from the river, the sight of her mortal guise was too much for Arion, who looked away, thrilled and embarrassed. She heard the ripple of wings leaving water, felt a brush of warm wind, and then, a second later, the sweetest lips pressed down on hers. Wet arms and wet wings engulfed her.
"What was that?"
Arion blinked in astonishment as Tessriel pulled away. Her lips tingled with unexpected desire.
"A kiss. I promised myself that if I did see you again, that's what I would do."
"And if I left right now and then came back," Arion wondered aloud, "would you kiss me like that again?"
Tessriel nodded, a vast smile on her face.
Goodbye, Arian whispered, closing her eyes. When she opened them, she said, Hello? And Tesriel kissed her again, and again. On a dark fjord north of Norway, on a ship setting sail for the Indies, on a dusty desert plateau in Persia, or in a rainstorm inside a rainforest. When the world was uncomplicated and young, and neither fallen angel had yet turned in the direction each would ultimately turn in, Arian and Tesriel were always saying goodbye to say hello again, always moving in or out of a kiss. Now, peeling as far as she ever had from the lips of the demon she'd loved, Arian passed a pair of herons in the sky. They were paired, but she had to be alone. Because of old allegiances, neither would betray. It drove her mad with frustration. She needed to be someplace lonesome and remote, where her heart could ache in peace. Tears blurred her vision as she climbed over the low-lying meadows of the valley below. She didn't want to leave Tess. She couldn't leave quickly enough. Soon, she had escaped the dairy in its little verdant vale, which she had grown to love. Love? What was it, anyway? Daniel and Lucinda seemed to know. There had been moments when Arian thought she danced toward love's awareness, tender, fleeting moments, locked in a kiss with Tess, when both souls lost themselves completely. If only they could have stayed like that forever, lying to themselves in an extended state of bliss. Maybe love was lying to yourself. No. The world bore down on them, and in the broad, clear light of day, Arian knew that what she felt for Tess both was and was not love. It was everything, and it was impossible. It was why they had already been through this kind of goodbye, the ugly kind, once before. It was a few hundred years after the fall. Arian had finally made her choice. She'd been back to the plains of heaven and, after some time, had made her peace with the throne. Her wings shone a terrific iridescent silver, the mark that she was accepted once again, and Arian was eager to show them off to her love. She found Tesriel under the Amazonian waterfall, where they had agreed to meet.
Look what I've done! What have you done?
Just as Arian's wings bore brand-new silver shine, Tesriel's wings were tainted, a glorious, gaudy gold.
You never told me you were considering...
Arian's voice trailed off.
You never told me either.
Tess's eyes welled up with tears, but as soon as she wiped them away, she looked angry.
But why? Why would you side with him? Isn't your choice as arbitrary as mine? Your master is only the authority because you say he is.
At least he is good, unlike your master.
Good, evil, they're just words, Arian. Who can trust them anyway?
How can I love you now? Arian whispered.
It's simple, Tess said with a sad shake of her head. You can't.
It was Roland who brought them back together. Now, Arian almost wished he hadn't. But at the time, she'd needed Tess more than she ever would have admitted. Roland arranged for a stolen moment between the two in Jerusalem, after what was supposed to be Cam's marriage to Lilith. That marriage hadn't happened. But Arian and Tesriel had. As soon as they saw each other, their argument dissolved into another, unstoppable kiss.
We must be free to each be ourselves independently, Tesriel had told her. But we shall never be as strong and solid as we are when we're together.
Be careful,
Roland was always saying, when she would sneak off to be with Tess. And Arian was. Never once did they get caught. Never once did the angel suspect Arian's secret romance with one of Lucifer's closest demons. She had been careful about so much, except the destiny of her heart. She simply had never expected Tesriel to make her choose. But now,
It had come to that, and there was only one choice. This goodbye had to be forever. Arion couldn't breathe. Tears streamed down her cheeks now as she gasped and blindly flew on, not knowing where she'd go. Would she ever see her love again? A sharp pain seemed to pierce her heart. An agony riddled its way into the fissures of her bones. What was happening? Then a dark premonition sapped at her soul, and Arion cried out in fear. She clutched her heart, but this wasn't mere heartache. Something was wrong. Tess. In the middle of her flight across the mountains of northern Italy, Arion swooped around to reverse directions in the sky. Her wings shuddered, and her heart stalled, and the only thing she knew was that she had to get back to the dairy farm. It was a lover's intuition, a slow consciousness spreading through her brain, until she was absolutely certain. Something had happened. Something unspeakable. 4. Love takes wing. The barn was empty. The sun had set. The only light, besides a cold sliver of Tuscan moon, shining through the open door, came from Arion's wings. They cast a soft, opalescent glow on the animals, which were not sleeping. The horses whinnied, and the chickens clucked restlessly in their pens. The cows lay in the musky hay, their udders swollen with milk. They sensed something, too. Arion grew frantic. Where was Tess? She paced the barn, searching for clues, finding only the evidence of their fight. The toppled milk pails, the scuffed patch of muddy hay where they had tussled. If she closed her eyes, she could still see Tess the way she wanted to, smiling, the bright flush in her cheeks. Arion's breath made clouds before her face. She watched them vanish into the frosty air. She wanted to scream, to stop every disappearing thing. The premonition was so strong that Arion wrung her hands, retracing her steps around the stables before she'd stormed off into the sky, remembering the angry words they had spat at each other, regretting everything she'd ever said or done to Tess that did not come from a place of utter love. There. She froze as her wingtip dragged across a mound of damp hay. What was that? Arion dropped to her knees. Her wings glowed white, illuminating the terrified animals, which were backed into the corners of their stalls. There was blood on the hay, a shiny red pool.
Tessriel!
Arion soared upward, scanning the ground madly for another trace of her love's blood. She flew in a panicked circle, scouring every inch of the barn, darting like a skylark, this way and that, finding nothing. Until she let her wings carry her outside, to the far side of the barn. There, just beyond the open doorway, she spied a small well of blood seeping into the grass. She moved closer, hovering over it. She wanted to touch it, but... No. She stopped herself. Stretching away from the pool of blood, dark red beaded drops formed a string several inches long, leading in the direction of the North Star. Tess was on the move, but what had happened to her? Arion flew low to the ground, seeking small signs. At various points she would see spots of blood on blades of tall grass, but then she would lose the trail again. At one point, having crossed a creek bed, the trail disappeared completely, and Arion wailed, feeling all was lost. But then, near a weeping willow tree, she picked up her lover's path again. Blood streamed for 20 yards. The trail widened, and it splashed far, as if a fresh wound had been inflicted. Was an enemy hunting Tess, wounding her as she fled? Arion sped up, desperate to come between Tess and whatever evil would dare harm her. Only one being could have hunted down a fully empowered demon. In her darkest imaginings, Arion could see Lucifer, the layers of cataracts on his eyes, his tremendous wings sprawling with rank black hairs. But would Lucifer have come here to wrestle Tess back to hell? Arion had never seen her love face to face with her master, though visions of it haunted her. If she discovered Lucifer in the act of harming Tess, Arion didn't know what she would do. She could barely fly through the rage that was building inside. Love like this was fatal, even for an angel.
"Tessriel!"
she bellowed again into the endless fields of green. But she heard nothing. In the west, storm clouds formed a dirty screen across the sky. Arion hoped that Tess hadn't traveled in that direction. Everything about the rain, its scent, its effect on the terrain, its purifying quality, would throw Arion off the trail. But maybe Tess was counting on that very thing. So the heart of the tempest was where she would go. Arion flattened her wings. She focused on picking up velocity. Turbulence shook her. Her body rocked from left to right, up and down, until she was soaked and shivering and spitting rain. That was when she saw Tess, lying on her back at the edge of a stony promontory in the foothills of the Dolomites, not far from where Arion had first sensed that something was terribly wrong. Tess looked like she was dying, but angels did not die. Her wings flailed out unnaturally on either side of her. Blood streamed from them, pooling on a flat rock beneath her. She was alone. She was alone! Arion was 100 feet above her in the air, but the dull silver gleam in Tess's hand was unmistakable. But why would Tess possess a starshot? Arion dipped down so quickly the wind roared in her ears. She landed on a light gray boulder a few feet in front of Tess. Her wings cast a circle of light in front of her, enfolding Tess's body in a cool halo of illumination. It was easy to see now. The starshot had lacerated the demon's left wing. It wasn't completely severed, but the formerly powerful copper wing now hung by the thinnest strand of imperial fibers. Rage flashed through Arion. She would murder whoever had done this. Then she looked at Tess's ashen face, eyes barely open, gazing up at her. And she understood. There was no one else to blame. This harshest of all wounds was self-inflicted. Only hours earlier, Arion had been thinking about the purity of an angel's skin, how nothing ever left a mark. But it wasn't absolutely true. Some things left permanent scars. Lucifer could do it with the ink of his tattoos. A starshot wound could do it, if it did not kill the angel. The mingling of...
Tessriel, no!
The demon held the starshot in her right hand and drew it near the wound again, as if intent on amputating the gilded wing from her body. But her fingers trembled so badly that the starshot sliced into other sections of the wing, spewing blood from its muscle-thick center. Only then did she seem to register Arion's presence.
"You've come back."
Her voice was as thin as the mountain air.
"Oh, Tessriel!"
Arion's hands covered her heart.
"They will never heal from this." "That is the idea. I needed something to remember you by."
"Don't say that!"
Arion dropped to her knees, crawling to where Tess lay upon the ground.
"What were you even doing with a starshot? Bartering with Azazel? That isn't done."
"It is done when the need is great enough. If I cannot have you, I do not want anything at all."
Tess grimaced as she thrust the starshot in a downward slicing motion across her mutilated wing. It made a sound like flesh being ripped apart, but it did not sever the wing completely.
It is harder than you think.
Stop it! Arion yelled, shooting out her hand to grab the starshot from Tess. In a flash, Tess turned the starshot on her.
Stay back, she said weakly. You know what will happen if you touch me.
Arion studied the fallen angel she loved, covered in blood that, if she touched it, would work like poison against her. But even knowing that didn't stop Arion. She needed Tess to know that she was not alone, that she was loved. The memory of Tess laughing echoed in her ears and warmed her insides. The image of Tess, dear, sweet, beautiful Tess, played across Arion's eyes as she did the unthinkable. She lunged toward Tessriel, throwing herself on top of the demon, grabbing for the starshot, crying out in anguish as Tessriel's blood seared her. It was the singular pain of demon blood on angel flesh, like a thousand dull swords driving into her soul. Blood on blood was even worse. Arion gritted her teeth, nearly going mad with the pain, as she wrested the starshot from Tess's hand.
Let me go!
Tess's fingernails tore at Arion's throat until they broke the skin, and Arion's own blood began to flow. An animalistic howl left Arion's lips. Her blood actually boiled as it met Tessriel's, turning to acid on her body and singeing off her skin. Wherever their blood commingled, bubbles rose up on the left side of her body, ugly scars knotting up her leg and torso and neck. Still, Arion did not let go.
Now see what you've done.
Tess's lips were blue from losing so much blood. Sadistic laughter punctuated her anguish.
Even my blood is anathema to yours, and yours to mine. Just like...
Here her voice faltered, and her eyes began to drift.
Just like they always said.
Stay still!
Arion tried to focus beyond the acidic burning. The only thing that mattered was stanching the flow of Tess's blood. She weighed the two limp wings in her hands, not knowing what to do.
You're making it worse, Tess shrieked. Stop! You've lost too much blood already!
Tess was convulsing, but she steadied one hand on the rock and raised her head just enough to stare deep into Arion's eyes.
You have broken my heart, Arion. You cannot be the one who heals me.
Arion's lip quivered.
I can. I will.
She tore at the skirt of her dairymaid's gown, using her teeth to rip the flimsy fabric into shreds.
It will never work, she thought, as she wove and stretched the fabric into a clumsy sling, draping it carefully around Tess's gushing left wing.
She quickly wove another sling, working until her fingers were numb with cold and fear. Tess's body continued to seize, but her eyes were closed, and she did not respond to Arion's admonitions to wake up. These slings would not do. Tess's wounds needed celestial intervention. That would require Gabby's help, and Gabby would be furious. But she was Gabby, so she would help anyway. Tess's wings would never be the same, but maybe someday she could fly. It was only after Arion had bandaged Tess's wings as best she could manage that she looked down at her own body. It was a miserable tableau. Her neck blazed with pain. Her dress had fallen to pieces along the left side. Her skin was mottled with swirling blood and silver pus and flaking angel tissue. She had nothing to dress her wounds. She'd used all of the cloth for Tess. She fell across the demon's lap and sobbed. She needed help, but could not carry Tess in her burned and battered state. What good would it do anyway? Maybe Tess was right. When one lover suffered from a broken heart, no matter how badly the other wanted to help. She couldn't be the one to heal it. As far as possible, Arian realized, each soul had to be content alone before plunging into love, because one never knew when the other would move out of that love. It was the greatest paradox. Souls need each other, but they also need to not need each other.
"I have to go,"
she whispered to Tess, whose breath was shallow, labored.
"I will send help for you. Someone will come to take care of you."
"I love you and will never love another. The best way I can honor that is to go now and fight for the kind of love we shared, the kind of love I believe in. I hope someday you find what you are looking for."
A tear slid down Arian's cheek.
"Happy Valentine's Day, my one and only."
A shooting star danced in a bright arc across the sky. North, just the direction Arian would need to fly to find Daniel and Lucinda. Her neck throbbed when she rose from the rock, but despite her injuries, her wings felt powerful and pristine. She spread them wide and flew away. Endless Love. The Valentine of Daniel and Lucinda. 1. Love Long Ago. Luce found herself at the far end of a narrow alley, under a slit of sun-bleached sky.
"Belle?"
she whispered. No reply. She'd come out of the announcer groggy and disoriented. Where was she now? There was a bustling brightness at the other end of the alley, some sort of busy market, where Luce caught flashes of fruit and fowl changing hands. A biting winter wind had frozen the puddles in the alley into slush, but Luce was sweating in the black ball gown she wore. Where had she first put on this tattered gown? The King's Ball at Versailles. She'd found this dress in some princess's armoire. And then she'd kept it on when she stepped through to the performance of Henry VIII in London. She sniffed at her shoulder. It still smelled like smoke from the fire that had burned down the globe. From above her came a set of loud bangs, shutters being thrown wide. Two women poked their heads out of adjacent second-story casement windows. Startled, Luce pressed herself against a shadowed wall to listen, watching as the women fussed about with a shared clothesline.
"Will you let Laura watch the festivities?" said one, a matronly woman in a simple gray cowl, as she pinned an enormous pair of damp trousers to the line.
"I see no harm in watching," said the other, a younger woman. She shook out a dry linen shirt and folded it with swift efficiency.
"So long as she doesn't partake of those bawdy displays. Cupid's Anne! Ha! Laura's only seen 12 years. She's far too young to fetch a broken heart."
"Oh, Sally," the other woman sighed through a thin smile. "You're too strict. St. Valentine's is a day for all hearts, young and old. It might do you and the mister a bit of good to be swept up in its romance yourselves, eh?"
A lone peddler, a short man dressed in a blue tunic and blue tights, turned down the alley, pushing a wooden cart. The women eyed him with suspicion and lowered their voices.
"Pears!"
he sang up to the open casements, from which the women's heads and hands had disappeared.
"Rotund fruit of love! A pear for your valentine will make this next year a sweet one."
Luce edged along the wall toward the alley's exit. Where was Bill? She hadn't realized just how much she'd come to rely on the little gargoyle. She needed different clothes, an idea of where and when she was, and a briefing on what she was doing here. Medieval city of some sort. A Valentine's Day festival. Who knew it was such an old tradition?
"Bill!"
she whispered, but there was still no answer. She reached the corner and edged her head around. The sight of a soaring castle made her halt. It was massive and majestic.
Ivory towers rose into the blue sky. Golden banners, each emblazoned with a lion, billowed gently from high poles. She half expected to hear a blare of trumpets. It was like stumbling accidentally upon a fairy tale. Instinctively, Luce wished Daniel were there. This was the kind of beauty that didn't seem real until you shared it with someone you loved. But there was no sign of Daniel. Just a girl. A girl, Luce recognized instantly. One of her past selves. Luce watched as the girl strolled across the cobblestoned bridge that led to the tall doors of the castle. She moved past them to the entrance of a fantastic rose garden, where the blossomless bushes were sculpted into tall, wall-like hedges. Her hair was loose and long and messy, trailing halfway down the back of her white linen gown. The old Luce, Lucinda, gazed longingly at the garden gate. Then Lucinda stood on tiptoe, reached a pale hand over the gate, and, from the middle of a bare-branched bush, bent the stem of a single unlikely red rose toward her nose. Was it possible to smell a rose sadly? Luce couldn't say. All she knew was that something about this girl, herself, felt sad. But why? Did it have something to do with Daniel? Luce was about to step fully from the shadowed alley when she heard a voice and saw a figure approach her past self.
There you are.
Lucinda released the rose, which snapped back into the garden, losing its blossom on the thorns as it crossed. The red teardrop-shaped petals showered down on her shoulders as she turned to face the voice. Luce watched Lucinda's posture change, a smile stretching across her face at the sight of Daniel. And Luce felt that same smile on her own face. Their bodies might be different, their daily lives looked nothing alike, but when it came to Daniel, their shared soul aligned completely. He wore a full suit of armor, though his helmet was off, and his golden hair was lank with sweat and dirt. He'd clearly come from the road. The speckled white mare beside him looked weary. Luce had to fight every urge in her body not to run into his arms. He was breathtaking. A knight in shining armor, to outshine any fairy tale knight. But this Daniel wasn't her Daniel. This Daniel belonged to another girl.
You came back!
Lucinda broke into a run, her tresses streaming in the wind. Her past self's arms stretched out inches from Daniel, but the image of her valiant knight wavered in the wind. And then it was gone. Disgust crept into Luce's stomach as she watched Daniel's horse and armor vanish into thin air, and Lucinda, who could not stop herself in time, crash headfirst into a belching stone gargoyle.
"Bumble!"
Bill cackled, spinning in a loop-the-loop. Lucinda screamed, tripped over her gown, and landed in the mud on her hands and knees. Bill's craggy laughter echoed off the facade of the castle. He flitted higher in the air and then eyed Luce glaring at him from across the street.
"There you are," he said, cartwheeling toward her.
"I told you never to do that again."
"My acrobatics?"
Bill hopped onto her shoulder.
"But if I do not practice, I win no medals," he said in a Russian accent.
She swatted him off.
"I meant changing into Daniel."
"I didn't do it to you, I did it to her."
"Maybe your past self thinks it's funny."
"She doesn't."
"That's not my fault. Besides, I'm not a mind reader. You expect me to realize you're speaking on behalf of all Lucindas ever, every time you talk. You never said anything about not razzing your past lives. It's all in good fun. For me, anyway."
"It's cruel."
"If you insist on splitting hairs, fine. She's all yours. I suppose you don't need me pointing out that what you do with them ain't exactly humane."
"You're the one who taught me how to go 3D.
"My point exactly,"
he said, with an eerie cackle that sent goosebumps running up Luce's arms.
Bill's eyes fell on a diminutive stone gargoyle capping one of the columns of the garden gates. He banked in the air, circled back to the column, and slung his arm around the gargoyle's shoulder, as if he'd finally found a true companion.
Mortals! Can't live with them! Can't consign them to the fiery depths of hell! Am I right, or am I right?
He looked back at Luce.
Not a big talker.
Luce could no longer stand it. She ran forward, hurrying to help Lucinda up from the ground. Her past self's dress was torn at the knees, and her face was sickly pale.
Are you all right? Luce asked.
She expected the girl to be thankful, but instead she recoiled.
Who? What are you?
Lucinda gaped at Luce.
And what kind of devil is that thing?
She flung her hand in Bill's direction. Luce sighed.
He's just... Don't worry about him.
Bill probably did look like a devil to this medieval incarnation. Luce most certainly didn't look much better. Some mental girl running up to her dressed in a futuristic ball gown that reeked of smoke?
I'm sorry, Luce said, glancing over the girl's shoulder at Bill, who seemed amused.
Thinking about going 3D? Bill asked.
Luce cracked her knuckles. Fine. She knew she had to cleave to this past body if she was going to move forward on her quest, but there was something in her past self's face, bewilderment, and a hint of inexplicable betrayal that made her hesitate.
This will just take a moment.
Her past self's eyes widened, but as she was about to pull away, Luce seized her past self's hand and squeezed. The solid stones beneath her feet shifted, and the world before Luce swirled like a kaleidoscope. Her stomach lurched up toward her throat, and as the world flattened back out, she was left with a distinctive nausea of cleaving. She blinked and, for that one unsettling instant, saw the disembodied view of both girls. There was medieval Lucinda, innocent, captive, and terrified, and there beside her was Luce, guilty, exhausted, obsessed. There was no time to regret it. On the other side of the blink, a single body, one conflicted soul. And Bill's fat-lipped smirk taking it all in. Luce clutched her heart through the rough linen dress Lucinda had been wearing. It hurt. Her whole body had become a heartache. She was channeling Lucinda now, feeling what Lucinda had been feeling before Luce inhabited her body. It was a move that had become second nature to her, from Russia to Tahiti to Tibet. But no matter how many times she did it, Luce didn't think she'd ever get used to suddenly feeling so keenly the landscape of her past emotions. Right now, it was the kind of raw pain Luce hadn't experienced since her early days at Sword and Cross, when she loved Daniel so much she thought it might split her in two.
"You're looking a little green around the gills,"
Bill floated before her face, sounding more satisfied than concerned.
"It's my past. She's..."
"Panicked? Sick at heart with love for that worthless oaf of a knight? Yeah, the Daniel of this era jerked you around like a slot machine pull on Senior's Day at the casino."
He crossed his arms broodingly over his chest and did something Luce had never seen before. He made his eyes flash violet.
"Maybe I'll be at the Valentine's Fair,"
he said in a husky, affected tone, a grossly oversimplified impersonation of Daniel.
"Or maybe I have better things to do, like slash losers with my humongous sword."
"Don't do that, Bill."
Luce shook her head, annoyed.
"Besides, if Daniel doesn't show at this Valentine's thing, he's got a good reason. I'm sure of it."
"Yeah,"
the croak returned to Bill's voice.
"You always are."
"He's trying to protect me," she argued, but her voice was weak.
"Or himself."
Luce rolled her eyes.
"Okay, Bill, what is it I'm supposed to learn in this lifetime? That you think Daniel's a jerk?"
Got it. Can we move on?
Not exactly.
Bill flew to the ground and sat beside her.
Actually, we're taking a holiday from your education in this life, he said. Based on your snippiness and the bags under my eyes.
He stretched out and displayed a wrinkly fold of saggy skin, which made a sound like a shaken bag of marbles.
I'd say we both need a day off. So, here's the deal. It's Valentine's Day, or an early form of it anyway. Daniel is a knight, which means he's got his pick of the parties. He can grace the endless church-sanctioned nobleman's feast in the castle of his lord.
Bill jerked his head toward the